That's what constant prayer means. The constant readiness to do God's will. One of my favorite definitions for constant prayer. Then, as you mistakenly say, something happens. You might say, I'm not ready. Forget it. God will provide. That's what providence means. Part 3. Resignation to God's provident care. This is the last and, I would say, most demanding step to living out divine providence. In imitation of the Holy Family, and that is resigning ourselves to God, loving, and we keep adding the adjective, providential care. I mean this when I say it. I believe most psychiatrists should be earning their living in another way. To really believe in providence, to sincerely dispose oneself to doing God's will, that in our tormented United States, with over 70 million Americans managing some semblance of peace of mind and tranquility of soul while living on medically prescribed tranquilizers. The key is not more psychiatry or more medicine. The key is more faith. But it better be an enlightened faith that understands what we're talking about. As we should expect, God's providence not only places demands on our faith, to believe that God has a purpose in everything in our lives, even though we don't see the purpose. That's what faith is all about. But that is not all. Nor does this mean only placing our trust in the providence of God. To align with childlike confidence. That, by the way, is the first meaning of childlikeness as a virtue in Christianity. You parents, how trustful children are. And what a responsibility we have not to betray that trust. But Christ was speaking to adults, to all of us. When he told us, unless we become like little children, we shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. And it's especially here, that's part 2 of our, shall I call it, lecture. Trust, like a child, in the providence of God. And God knows better than we what is most for his divine glory, our own good, and the salvation and sanctification of souls. Well, that's not all. We've got a part 3. Divine providence also places a burden on our generosity. And this is the acme of living a life of sacrifice. You read in St. Luke's Gospel that when Jesus was born, Mary wrapped her child in swaddling clothes. I've been using the Vulgate, the only fully authenticated translation of the scriptures in the church. Other translations are useful. This one is authentic. Here the Latin is revealing. Mary is said to have wrapped Jesus in panis, P-double-N-I-S, which means she wrapped him in torn pieces of cloth. It means she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in rags. That's the only correct translation, either the revealed Greek or the official Latin, and she wrapped him in rags. Swaddling clothes. Thanks for the nice language. We are further told that she laid him in a manger. This too, as we know some French, we have a rich vocabulary. You've got to look it up in the dictionary. Manger is a poetic expression for trough. That's spelled T-R-O-U-G-H. Or the box from which animals are fed. In other words, the correct translation should read, she wrapped him in rags and laid him in a trough. We are finally told that Jesus was born in a stable because there was no room for him in the inn. Well, for all three. It does not really matter why there was no room for Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Rather, the innkeepers around Bethlehem had space, saw this bedraggled pair, and said to themselves, oh no. This, what shall we call it? Motel, first century AD, is for more respectable people than the two that are here asking to come in. Whether there really was no room does not matter. This is the way that God provided, get the verb, provided, for his divine Son's visible entrance into the world. What a lesson. What a lesson. Better. What a rebuke for all of us. Without identifying the rectory where I stayed in Washington overnight before the wedding, it was lush. Everything, soft carpets, curtains and drapes, and of course, a blind on the windows. Heat, 5 levels of temperature. Everything the human heart, humanly speaking, with desire. We are living in the most materially prosperous nation of human history. May live the longest life. May do the least work. Did you know, at the height of all American women on an average, has increased by, did you know this, by 7 inches since 1900. Did you know that? We are a materially prosperous nation. We're talking about part three about living our faith in divine providence. What an examination of conscience. And the first one to do so is myself. There's only one danger, that after this lecture is over, Father Garden gave an unusual homily. And then, get into our car, make sure that everything, of course, is now with the temperature outside, nice and warm inside. And then we drive away. We don't even have to walk. But let me tell you, most of the human race is not living, dare I say it, I will. Most of the human race is not living in the fool's paradise in which Americans are living today. Most of the human race goes to bed hungry every night. As far as American Congress could find out, report, the monthly average of people in India dying of starvation is 100,000. Back to our lecture. God expects a lot of those whom He loves. He requires sacrifices of those who are dearest to Him. And I must add, and God demands the heaviest sacrifices of those whom He loves the most. Can you imagine anyone who has the faith in his right mind ever complaining about anything in his or her life if they really believe what I've just said? And God is merciful. Like around whom I'm speaking to, I feel comfortable. There may be somebody older than me. I think I'm safe. But in the longest life, over the numerator of eternity, gives us nothing. The short span of time, make it 100 years over eternity. Nothing. During which, the most important thing that God expects of us is to sacrifice what we want with our wills to conform these selfish, beginning with this sinner. I know what I'm talking about. Believe me, what I'm sharing with you is deeply autobiographical. What He most wants of us is to surrender, to give up, believing that when God either removes what we like or sends us what we don't like, that He is doing it out of love. Oh, no. Oh, yes. And if I love him, better. In the measure that I love him, then I will not only not complain, I'll be happy. And the last thing you'd expect me to say, and happier in the measure of the sacrifice I've got to make. God demands a price, a high price, of all those who he wants to use. And he wanted to use these three persons: Jesus, God in human flesh, Mary his mother, and Joseph his foster father, to bring not just souls, but the whole human race to himself. It'd be only as effective, you parents, having the faith. You want to share your faith with your own flesh and blood. You'll be only as successful in not only being physical parents of your offspring, but spiritually reproduce yourselves and the children God sends you in the measure that you yourselves are living lives of sacrifice. In the degree then to which we resign ourselves to whatever this providence of God expects of us, in just that measure will God use us far beyond our natural capacity or about at our wildest dreams. Whatever else our country needs today, it needs saints, holy people, and of course not people who think they're holy. A sure sign of not being holy: if you think you are and you wonder why the church reserves canonizations until after a person has died. God will use us in the measure that we ourselves are united to him, and especially in letting go of our own wills and surrendering these wills to the will of God. Being sure that the three persons, as we've just said, were the three principal channels of grace to the whole human race. Poor child was born in a stable, and nobody would even have known unless God then had mysteriously and miraculously informed, and of all people, shepherds, that the Messiah had been born. What are we saying? God will use us to cooperate with him in saving a de-Christianized United States, as we ourselves are closely, deeply, and self-sacrificingly united with God, by not only believing in his providence or trusting, but living it in our lives of sacrifice. Amen. Thank you for listening. We still have, I think it's a 2:15. I think that's the usual schedule. What if we do this by way of exception? Because we have a lot to cover in our next class. Suppose we have a 15-minute break, don't we? Yes. And by way of exception, I've got 2:08 and 22 seconds. Suppose we reassemble at 2:30 sharp. Is that fair? 2:30 sharp for our next class. Let's say a prayer and in Latin. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus, et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Iesus. Santa Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc in hora mortis nostri, amen. Mater, divini providentiae, in nomine Patris et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti.